a carer, exploring the hidden stories behind the role. Episode 1. Can I call you a carer?
I resisted for a long time because I felt rightly or wrongly, probably wrongly, but that if I took on the mantle, if I said, well, I'm the carer, that would have been yet another little plank in the just let them get on with it line, you see. And when eventually I gave in to saying, I'm already a carer, but I had no help at all because I thought that meant that somebody would actually come and see me and listen to what was going on. No. What happened was I got another phone call a week or two later with a questionnaire, answer 1 to 4. I said to my GP at the time, I said, well, thank you for trying to contact these people, but this seems to me to be about as close a relationship to counseling as painting by numbers is to art.
Caring. It's a word that carries weight. But what does it truly mean to be a carer? Is it a title, a responsibility, or simply an extension of love? Welcome back to Are You a Carer? Exploring the hidden stories behind the role. In this episode, we are looking at how do you become a carer and what does it mean? Carers know what it is like to always be the supporting act. We'd notice if they were gone, but often we don't really attend to them as individuals, people in their own right, or their stories when they're there. Healthcare policy is moving from the language of patient-centred care to person-centred or personalised care. The rhetoric shift suggests recognition of the need to consider the wider identity of those who need care, but it still fails to consider their relationships with others and the role of families, friends and neighbours, supporting and caring. The idea that one person, even when they are the prime beneficiary of an activity such as healthcare interventions, can fully and solely occupy the centre, bears little relation to how life actually works, making it neither realistic nor often what people really want. We heard many stories about the problems that could be caused, for example, when someone was being discharged from hospital.
The carer has to be part of the system and not seen as an addendum. I sometimes find you see patients, you know, when they're referred, whether they've been in hospital 3, 4, or 5 weeks. And at that stage, there's still no information in the notes about who the carers are, who's important to the patient, who's doing the care, what their home situation looks like, and you kind of find out quite late. Often, only when somebody says this person's ready for discharge are those questions starting to be asked. And so you're often having a bit of a setback.
As the introductory quote to this episode highlighted, even when system redesign has led to change, with, for example, the introduction of care assessments, all too easily these can become just another box to tick, giving the message that we need to make sure you're all right so that we can keep relying on you to fill the gaps. When we fail to see a person as anything other than ancillary to another, and when we collectively overlook the needs of the most vulnerable and least able to care for themselves, we are implicitly outsourcing impossible caring work and the responsibility for this work to small groups in society. This seems very unjust. So how do you become a carer and what does this mean? I became curious about this because in my work as a doctor, I know how much of a relief it is to find someone has a competent adult to support them. Yet I was noticing in my role as a researcher just how ambivalent some of the people I spoke to were about being called a carer. As you will hear, for many people, becoming a carer is less of a deliberate decision at a specific point in time and more something that grows on you. By default, because of traditional or cultural expectations, because you have a reputation of being a go-to person, or simply by accident, with one thing leading to another. For others, there is a time of suspense, watching as a carer and waiting, recognising that someone they love needs support but isn't ready to accept this yet. For many people, being a carer is something they only realise in retrospect or when someone else puts it to them. This seems to be especially common when someone has a serious mental illness. One woman told us,
"We've been married 44 years, so I suppose most of that time. Though it wasn't until the first 10 years that we'd been married that I realised I was a carer. I had a care coordinator, and care coordinators vary. Some are brilliant, some are absolutely useless. And we had a very good one, and she told me I was a carer. And until then, I hadn't realised I was a carer. I thought carers were people that took care of people that had physical health problems. And for some of the time, when my husband's been in good health, I've thought to myself, am I really a carer? But now, over the years, it's sort of crept up on me, and it's all so meshed together that I was a carer. It's just he couldn't function without me. I know that. Well, not for very long, and I definitely know that. Caring for somebody with mental health problems is caring."
This recognition is a moment many carers describe. A realisation of what they've been doing is more than just helping out. It's a role with weight, expectations, and often little guidance. Others feel tensions between their identity as a carer and other aspects of life.
He was section. And it was the first time that I'd had anything to do with mental health at all. You could say there were links in our family, but there were very tenuous links.
Would you describe yourself as a carer? Is that a word you would use about yourself?
I am a carer. I care. I don't see that as my whole soul role in life. And I work very hard. One of the things that happened when my husband died was I went to a bereavement service, see a therapist, and very, very helpful to me indeed. Because one of the things she helped me learn, not only was I learning to live without my husband, but I have also been learning to live without the son who might have been. Mm. There was a double grief. And one of the things she helped me really learn to do was to realise that I had a life to live as well, mm. and that I had a right to live my life. Well, I am a carer. It varies, the degree to which I'm a carer has varied at different times.
There are also many other reasons for people being unsure about owning the label of carer, ranging from a sense it could be a given, just a normal part of life, or they didn't deserve it, hadn't earned it, to worrying that if they took on this role, the person they were supporting might lose out by getting less professional or expert help, as was the case for the person in our opening quote. I sat down with some of the carers involved in my research to discuss this further.
I don't call myself a carer. It's a title that has been given to me by a lot of people, initially by the healthcare professionals, and then as I started interacting, it's a title that was given to me by lots of people. But I don't see myself as a carer. I see myself as someone caring for a loved one. I look after a family member who's got lots of multiple long-term health condition. She is frail. She is someone who has been with me for all of my life. And therefore, what I do is I do that as a family member, I do that as a son. And to me, whatever I do, I'm doing that as what a son will do for a sister, a brother, for mother or father. So this is basically, I come from a culture where that's just norm. And you look after your loved ones, you look after someone who needs help, and it doesn't really matter whether that's a family member, that's a cousin, uncle, aunt, extended family, neighbors, that's the way it is. So I ended up in that role purely because there was a need, and I did that out of love. But I recognize that I was becoming the main interface between the healthcare professionals and, you know, the GPs, the consultants, the nurses, the social workers, and the person I'm looking after. So it was a title that was given to me as a carer. And I have accepted that, because to me, a carer is just a name, it's just a title. But what I didn't realize is that when you become the so-called carer, when you are looking after someone, you become pretty much isolated from the rest of the world.
You know, it's just a useful point to remember of what happens when ill health is something that not just the person who's ill is dealing with, but the dynamic in the relationship as well between you.
But I think it needs somebody to say explicitly, to say that it's okay, we are all uncertain, we are all we all don't know what's going to happen, but it's okay, we're going to deal with this fear together, so that we'll be slowly mold whatever we are doing or evolving into.
But the reality is that that is not the situation. The person who needs help doesn't want to be dependent on anyone else, but they just are becoming frail for whatever reason. They have become frail and they need help. And if we don't step up, then who is going to? And what is the purpose? Because today we are normal, but tomorrow we will be dependent. So I think most carers probably have understood that, and they put themselves, and they do that because they feel it is the right thing to do. And they step up and do it. They're not really worried about what the society thinks of them or don't think of them. They do it because it is right from their point of view to do it. I stepped up and did that. I wasn't looking for any gratitude. I wasn't looking for any appreciation or acknowledgement. I just did it because it made me feel good.
I think in answer to how long I've been caring, I think it's been evolutionary for me, because in a sense, when I reflect on my life, I've always been the kind of carer from very early on. But in a more formal sense, probably recognizing that what I do is the kind of things that a carer might do, it's probably been over the last 10 years. And that, I think the change has been much more about my awareness that I'm following up on a lot more of the things that I might have previously done. So remembering, oh, what do I need to do with that? It may be things, for example, like just picking up medications on behalf of somebody that I didn't have to do before because their needs have changed. So, I mean, it's been complicated for me to accept that actually the thing that I do today as a carer is actually part and parcel of my personality. And I've resisted that because I think I've mentioned to you previously that it's almost as if it's something that's been handed to me to do, rather than something that I, where there's been no negotiation on my part, but actually there's a part of me that actually wants to do it as well.
And do you think that, looking back, do you see a point in time of either someone first referring to you as a carer, or you kind of thinking, oh yes, that is something that I am? Or do you still feel like I'm not sure that's the label I want to have?
All of those things at different points in time. I think for me, the cultural expectation, the cultural norms would be that I would never really have seen myself as a carer, because no one from my community would actually, there's no such label. It was in a sense that it was almost like looking in a mirror and thinking, oh, that's me. That's some of what I do. It's been a challenge for me to look in the mirror and say, well, that is who I am. Because at times I felt like a fraud, because it feels like, well, that is what I should be doing anyway. So why is this, what makes me different? And why am I different to somebody else that is caring for somebody, whether it's a family member or a neighbour? What makes it different? And there are a lot of reasons why it's different. You know, when there are, for example, increasing demands on your time, or when, as I mentioned previously, when you're having to follow things up, or when you feel that you need to follow it up, that changes. That has an impact on your life. So therefore, for me, the change has been much more about who am I? What's my life about? When a substantial amount of your time goes in thinking about other people's needs, whoever those people might be.
Basically, I'm what you call an accidental carer. I never thought of myself as a carer, and I'm still a bit uncomfortable with that label. I don't, or more specifically, I never want to be thought of as a sort of nurse. And I know that sounds bad because nurses are brilliant, but I couldn't see myself like that. It didn't sort of make sense. And it sort of happened reluctantly and inevitably. So I'm primarily talking about two friends. They both happened to be heavy drinkers, but one of them became more and more ill through his drinking mostly, and he needed help. And partly because of my circumstances, I've been self-employed forever. And I was free to help when I could. And at the time, his circle of friends, they had their own busy lives. They couldn't really help. And so I started helping, which is mainly helping him recover from hospital visits and things. And in certain cases, he was in a real mess. He really, cognitively, he'd lost it. And so he didn't know where the kitchen was in his flat and things like that. So, I would go and stay with him just for a few days, and I was constantly trying to help out with it. It sort of went into the COVID period, and getting his test kits done. And he was a complicated man and a real pain at times, but he needed help. And sort of half of him was sort of, I don't know, he was almost deliberate. He wanted help just so he could be centre of attention. I mean, that's the terrible truth. So it started there, and then, not strangely, but his best friend, he has been ill for a long time, over 10 years. He'd had his first cancer. He had three unrelated cancers, and his medical needs became very advanced in the end. But my original contact was just to help him out with the computers, and it was... The first thing was an order of service for a funeral of his friend. He couldn't print it. And so I just went down there, no intention of being paid or anything like that. I just went to help, because I suppose that's the other thing I have to say, if I'm being honest. I like helping. I like, helping on anything if I can. I just, I think it's good for me. But anyway, I started off with a simple sort of computer task, and then it got more involved. I do all sorts of things, so I ended up decorating his flat and then clearing his attic, and then COVID came along, and he literally was stuck. He was a man on his own in a small flat. He couldn't get shopping delivered. He all the delivery services stopped working, and he literally was in a mess, because he was sort of pretty much flat bound by then. So I didn't have to think about it. Obviously, I was going to help because there was nobody else who could or seemingly available. So that's what happened. And then it just got more and more medical. And although many times I tried to stop it, he became more and more reliant. And so I ended up going to every single medical appointment. And my God, there were a lot, and including things like A&E, you know, getting a hospital, I mean, the ambulance out. And the worst night ever, I was in A&E until about 4:30 in the morning. And I was really thinking, what the hell am I doing with my life? Why am I here? but I had to do it. He was on his own. And I mean, yeah, well, there was just no choice really. But there was a constant conflict because I'm thinking, what am I? What's going on here? Why aren't I sorting my own life out? And in a way, it was easy to do this so-called caring thing and sort of hiding a bit from what I should be doing or might be doing. So it did put things off, and it was a sort of escape route, and it gave me that pleasure of helping somebody. So it was sort of making me feel good about myself, but it was also incredibly tense. And there were all sorts of situations which were mad, absolutely mad, and mainly to do with dementia type things and delirium. And there were situations I got in which I just couldn't believe, and they really shocked me. So I found it hard work, and I got really, really wrapped up in it in a way I was not expecting. So it wasn't every day, but it was certainly every other day.
So the conflict for me has been about, I'm not a carer, I'm a human. And with that, for me, just being considerate, compassionate, caring, and kind to each other. So sometimes when I've ended up in a situation where I've been caring for somebody, it's not been because I've thought to myself, oh, I'm about to do this, which means that I am going to be a carer for them. I'm going to pick up on X, Y, Z because that's their need. It's almost like an innate response to a situation or someone's a distress, just something that I think I might also want someone to do the same for me one day. I often find that I'm putting myself when I reflect on, well, why do I do certain things, it's because I think, well, isn't that what you do? And if the situation were reversed, I'd like to think that somebody might be able to reciprocate that for me.
They also talked about additional angles to the caring role, such as seeking to preserve normality and the person in need of support's ability to give as well as to receive.
Well, the thing is, I don't identify myself as a carer. But obviously, I'm invited here because I perceive myself having some kind of relevant experience. So the thing is, a family member of mine got cancer, and she is in some kind of palliative care. And I help in the sense of not delivering some kind of traditional physical care like some other people would, let's say, bringing the people to bed or feeding them or helping them to go to the toilet, et cetera, et cetera. I was actually thinking about what I actually did was more like acting as if that person is a so-called normal person. So I try to do what that person would do if that person is not sick. So for example, I would still ask the person to cook something for me. But of course, before I ask that, I would think in my head what kind of capacity she still has and what she can cook. So I would deliberately pick something that is so-called simple, but then she still has the ability to do it, and ask her to do it for me. So in some sense, I'm not a carer, but I do care for that person. And the way I care for that person is through acting normal, as if that person is still a healthy person. Because I was thinking in English, now the rhetoric's not a cancer patient, but a person living with cancer. So that person is a person. She can still do some of the things, even though not all of the things that she used to do, but she can still do something. And there are times that she cannot do anything and she just have to lie down, but then there are times she can still do something. And so I make sure that I would maximize whatever she perceives she can do and make sure that I sort of, well, I shouldn't say I make sure, but I try to provide opportunities so that she feels normal. And that's how I care for her. But I, because of that, I wouldn't identify myself as a carer.
Mm. And it sounds like this idea of supporting someone to feel or to be normal is really important.
Yes. And I was actually, when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking about the book Tuesday with Maury, where the protagonist visited the professor every Tuesday and the professor was dying. And then if you ask me whether that person, whether that protagonist was a carer, he's not a carer because there was a carer at home, like a professional one, I forgot. But for me, he definitely was caring for the mind of the professor, because by conversing or interacting with the professor, that professor felt, I suppose, energized, as if he could still live a life despite his condition. And so in some sense, in that sense, I would say, even though he's not a carer in the traditional sense, but he did care for the mind of that patient. I mean, sorry, for that professor. And that's why he was still caring. Yeah, providing support.
Support was a word that came up a lot, even though people often found it difficult to define. Everyone was sure that it was possible to tell when it was present, and somehow this seemed to encompass more and be less problematic in people's minds than the label of carer or idea of caring for someone, perhaps because support could be distributed between people.
And, and also I would say sometimes if you want to care for a person, maybe you don't have to do it directly with that person, but with other people who care for that person, either professionally or through family ties. And so for example, if I know that a particular family member is so-called responsible for the medical side of that person who is dying, then I would say to that person, okay, so is there anything with that we can do? Or is there anything you can update us? Or is there anything you know that we can provide, for example? So it's some kind of indirect support, which I think is also very, very important, because I believe that, you know, the person who is having some kind of condition may not want like 3 billion people talking to them every single day.
I think all of us as a carer will have gone through that phase. Human beings, by the very nature, they will always want to manage the situation themselves. So a person needing care or the person trying to provide the care, they're all trying to do the right thing. But the person who is needing the care will probably not want to be a burden on anyone else. And therefore, they will not fight, but they will always try to demonstrate that they can look after themselves. They will always try to be resilient and show that they can cope. And the person who is trying to offer help will recognize that the patient needs help, but they don't want to, you know, force themselves onto that person. There is that sliding curve whereby you become frail in your ability to manage and you become more and more dependent on others. And whether you call that old age, whether you call that dependency, whether you call that needing care support, they are just the terms that we use. But really, it is the situation whereby a trust has to be developed slowly. Because I think human beings, by the very nature, they don't want to be a burden to someone else or to rely on someone else. They want to be as independent as possible. But none of us, even if we are absolutely normal, we can do everything. We do rely on others, but we don't give ourselves that term that I'm dependent.
And so in a case where a person doesn't perceive themselves as needing help, I think even though they may not be showing it, I think that the people responsible for caring have to gently and slowly and gradually let the person know that it's okay. It's nothing shameful. It's what is almost like a practical need. Exactly how to do that may vary from case to case, but I think this way of letting that person feel comfortable, of letting the other people do certain things for them is very important, because I think that feeling of shame may not even be something conscious.
It became clear that everyone I was talking with had been through a process to find out what worked for them, and that this often involved claiming a position in the system for themselves that fitted better with their values.
And I just think it's interesting to bring up the title, because it almost shifts this discussion into a different thing, a different, you know, a different response. A patient advocate is there to formally help that person in whatever way they can, but it shifts the discussion. And just using it, it shifts it, you know. So I just throw that in because, you know, if you say to yourself, you know, I am a patient advocate, you know, because it's almost a formal title, I am a patient advocate, not a carer. This might be of use to somebody somewhere along the line. Call yourself a patient advocate and see how you change in response to it.
Caring is an act of humanity, whether we choose the label or not. It's a part of our shared experience, even if it is not always acknowledged in healthcare systems.
Because it's really important. And I mean, I know it's important because I went through it. But when to bring it into the present day, carers are finally, I think, being invited to join the table of, you know, step up and be there as part of the discussion. But that wasn't the case, certainly, when I was doing it. And anyhow, it was just about doing it. There was no sense of being part of a community. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like that. It wasn't long term enough. You know, I do think with the way there is better communication between groups who are trying to manage a condition, whether it's a child or a family member, you know, there's more sense of community. It doesn't help on a day-to-day basis, but it does mean that people can see that they're part of, you know, one group with whatever condition it is. I see that happening, and I listen to people supporting each other, and I think that's a positive. It doesn't take away from the, and I mean this kindly when I use it, you know, the daily grind of supporting somebody who needs your help, no matter what age, what condition.
There are some glimmers of hope, however.
I think that I've seen the change in where, you know, you're, for example, my GP will also ask, are you a carer? I think that makes a difference, because when you provide that information, sometimes even in terms of your own self, if you call up about something, they have a contact. They know, they can see that you're a carer, or and who it's for, and perhaps what the issue might be. So the types of support in terms of myself, I feel that that's changed. No one used to ask in a GP setting whether you were a carer. So that is that's one big change. Also at the hospital, actually there's 2-3 hospitals where, you know, I go along for appointments as a carer, and all of them now have the role of carer, or a name of a carer is noted, which then means that discussions are more likely to be open. The fact that hospitals and GPs and hospices and a lot of other institutions will ask, is there a carer? Is there someone's name you want us to put down? Or they'll, even the carer will be asked, are you, even patient will be asked, are you a carer for somebody? Because you might be the cared for at a given point in time, but you may also be a carer for somebody.
In the next episode, we'll explore the loneliness and isolation that carers face, how care functions or not from the perspectives of people drawn into caring roles, and what more needs to change in our systems to truly support them.